Last time we met, we were doing the topic of Migul B'Mokom Eidim. I want to finish with that. Speak about that a little bit more. So again, that's the Gemara here on Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. Very, very interesting Gemara. What happens when seemingly there's a clash between the impact or the information provided by the Eidim on one side and Amigo on the other? Because it's obvious that Eidim are the gold standard for evidence in the Torah, Pishnayim Eidim. As I said a couple of weeks ago, that it was before Shavuos, Matan Torah itself rests on the testimony of the equivalent of Eidim, as the Rambam so eloquently develops it in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah. On the other hand, normally Migu, as we've been seeing in these Gemaras, is an effective source of information as well. If a Migu establishes credibility about a certain claim, so normally that claim is upheld. What happens when you have a contradiction between the implications of Migu and the implications of Eidus? So that's the, seemingly, that's the Gemara here on Lamed Aleph from Aleph. And again, on Lamed Gimel on the base, Gemara says as follows. Very top of Lamed Aleph from Aleph, after the two dots. Zelmer Shalavosai, Zelmer Shalavosai. Each one claims that his ancestors owned this property, same property. So on the surface, at least, it seems like a contradiction between them. High Isi Sadid Abasayi, the High Isi Sadid Achushne Chazak. So when it comes to bringing evidence, so one is able to bring evidence about the claim that the property belonged previously to their relatives, and the other one is only able to bring evidence about being in the field for 3 years. But he can't bring any evidence about the taina of Zel Meshalavosai that the property belonged to his forefathers. So the Gemara says that Amar Rabba, and this is the Gears of Tosas, as we'll soon see, Malo l'shaker, ibayamale minoksevinta v'achaltia shnei chazaka. This is a migu, because he could have said, meaning the fellow who has edus on chazaka, could have said, instead of making the claim, it's my ancestral property, he could have said, I purchased the property from you, I've been there 3 years, and therefore it's my property. Since he has a winning taina, because he does have edim on cheskes gimel shanim, so he has a winning taina in his pocket, therefore he has a migu, and a migu, as we've seen time and again, should be a sufficient basis to win a case. So migu di bayamar minok zvinta, I bought it from you, v'achaltia shnei chazaka, I've been 3 years, a winning taina. He should be neman to say, shalav osai, what he really is saying, which is, the property came to me in inheritance from my ancestors. That's the position of Rabba. Migu. Abaya says, it's true there's a migu, but this migu is a migu b'makom Eidim. This migu is contradicted by Eidim. Amalei Abaya, ma'alu l'shaker, which is another word for migu, b'makom Eidim lo amrinan. After all, the Eidim themselves testify that the property didn't belong to his ancestors, but they belong to the other fellow's ancestors. Therefore, it's true you have a migu, but your migu clashes with Eidim, and migu b'makom Eidim lo amrinan. So then the Gemara goes on to say, let's finish the Shaka Fari again, Hadar Amalei in Davasechi Zavanta Minach. Let's say the guy says, after this all happens, and let's say you paskin like Abaya, so we give the property to the one who is able to prove the claim of Ze Omer Shel Avosai. So now what happens is, the fellow comes and he says, you didn't understand what I meant. When I said, Shalavosai, I didn't mean literally Shalavosai, I meant Davasechi. It's factually comes from the property would belong to your ancestors. There's Avanta Minach and I bought it from you. When I said Davasai, what I meant was the Samech Halakha Davasai. I rely on this property as if this property came to me from my ancestors. That's the explanation that he gives. So the Gemara wants to know, toin b'chozov v'toin, do we believe this revised taina, or no? And then if we'll get back to it today, if not, then we'll finish this up next week, but The basic point is that when it comes to Eidos, the principle is Kivin Shehigid, Shuvin Echozer Magid. Normally you're not allowed to revise or add, all things being equal, to your testimony. There might be an exception here or there, and you have to understand those exceptions, but all things being equal, Kivin Shehigid, Shuvin Echozer Magid. On the other hand, when it comes to the principle of Shavya Nafsha Chaticha V'Isura, let's say a woman comes to court and she says, Eishasi Shani, I'm a married woman. Then the next day she comes back to court and she says, I'm not a married woman. The only reason I said it was yesterday is because I wanted to discourage some ardent suitor, right? Somebody who wanted to marry me. So instead of saying to him, I don't want to marry you, she said, Lul Nebuch, I'm an Eishasish. Or not Nebuch, but she said, I'm an Eishasish. So if that's her justification, that's called an Amasla. The Gemara says in Ksuvah, Safcha, Beisam, and Aleph, that an Amasla works. A justification, explanation works. That's in Shavi Nafsha Chaticha D'Yitzur. So now, just to put it in a framework, it's interesting to try to figure out, what about Hodah Spaldin or Tainas Baldavar? Right? Is that treated like Eidos? Kim Chigit Shimon Chozer Magid? In which case, we're very inflexible, very rigid, right, about retraction, maybe even revision, maybe even amplification, or, no, it's more on the lines of Shavya Nafsha. What about other Nemonios? For example, Eidacha Nemon B'Yisurin. Is that treated like Eidos, or is that treated like Shavya Nafsha? What about the Eidos of, within the Nemonios of a father about his daughter, or about, father about his son? There are such categories in Halacha. How are they generally treated in terms of the question of retraction, revision, etc.? So here too, there's a question in the Gemara. What about revising? Here's without justification. There, it's not a revision, it's a change based on justification. Here we're talking about a revision, right, without a justification whatsoever. So that in itself, it might be different. I'm just trying to show that there are different categories. In Halacha, you'd have to assess these questions according to all the different levels of mnemonos that we find. Yeah?
I'm trying to visualize what exactly happens in the moment of the case when Aiden comes and testifies. Is there the equivalent of an examination and a cross-examination? And when, if so...
To the Aiden.
To the Aiden.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, we don't have... I mean, our Torah... You require Yishuv HaKira in Lamanas as well as in Nefashos. Midrabban on the limited to Nefashos.
So when you say Kivin Shehigid, I mean, how the minute words come out of Aiden's mouth, that is cast in stone forever?
Or I mean, the question of Yishuv HaKira, yes, no, Dorais, Midrabban, I mean, that's questions, that's, you know, an interrogation or examination to get more facts. Right, to establish that you know enough, maybe in order to establish a foundation for Kivin Shehigid Shuvin Echozer Magid, I mean for Azama, and should be Eishiyat Yachal Azima. But the basic idea of Kivin Shehigid Shuvin Echozer Magid is simply that when you've testified in Bezdin, you can't recant your testimony. You can't go to Bezdin one day and say, let's take a Dina Mom in this case. I witnessed this Gneva, right? And then come back tomorrow and say, I was pressured at the time, right. Okay. And I lied.
But clarifying at the same time. Again, I said, I saw...
Well, Tokhne Divor in the context of an Eidos, that's never a problem with Shumar Chozer Magid. Question is, if the Tokhne Divor is over, and Haggadah is over, and now... there's some question about your testimony.
And there's been a chance for clarification or amplification within that framework, within the initial framework.
Certainly within Tokhe De Dibor, you can do whatever you want. Everybody would agree about that. Once you finish the Tokhe De Dibor, yeah. Then...
Even
if you can't undo. Unless other Adam come along and contradict you, etc. But you cannot just say I was lying. We don't accept
that
as
a clarification. As I hear you the equivalent would be an amplification or...
Well, this is a little more. We'll see in a moment.
Say, I am not articulate.
Well, I mean, again, saying... you have to understand that, again, there are two levels here, as we'll see in the Gemara in just a minute. But saying that, when I said this was my ancestral homeland, you know, what I meant was, you know, I rely on it so much, it's like one of my ancestors, or it's as if I got it from my ancestors.
Right.
That's why I use the expression revision rather than... There are things called amplification. Amplification would be the next case of the Gemara, which is, true, I said it's my ancestors, but I didn't say that it wasn't your ancestors. Meaning, my ancestors purchased the property from your ancestors, assuming that the Edim only establish that the property belonged to the other fellow's ancestors, we'll see in a moment, not that they belonged to his ancestors until the very last minute, precluding the possibility that there was a transaction between his and my ancestors.
Not the Adams. Again, I'm going back. I'm sorry for pushing.
But that's okay.
I'm going back to the Adam case. When is the point of Kibbutz it?
When the Haggadah Seder is complete. Whatever, now if there is the Drisha V'Chakira and so on, so presumably that's all part of it.
At some point we say, Dayenu, but until that time,
As I say, Tokeh Deidibur or within the context of their actual Haggadah, you know, they can certainly, I don't know if they can recant, but they can certainly, you know, explain. But once they finish their Haggadah, however that's defined, then the principle of Kibbutz Shehigit applies. Whereas I say in a Masla, it doesn't. So you can come back next week, you can come back in a month, you can come back in 5 years if it's a good enough, a reasonable... You know, a reasonable kind of type.
Why can't the witness come back and recant the testimony like the case of Sunni Sayyid Muslim, saying, you know, I'm recanting my testimony with a justification, not just that they came back?
But that's the special rule. I mean, why these things should be different that we can explain, I don't want to get into that right now, but they're I mean, on a simpler level, number one is there's a kasu. Kim Jigid Shubin Hoser Umadid. That's. Now, some interpret that means that you have this one opportunity to give Haggadah and Bezdin on a case. So you better capitalize on that opportunity. If you squander it, you squander it. So it's not so much that you can't recant as much as it is, you can recant all you want, but you still have only a single opportunity and anything beyond that single opportunity. That's how the Ritzvah explains it in Masechet Ketubot.
Is there a case where somebody outside with a gun to my head and says...
Well, again, if somebody else can prove that, that's something else. We're talking about recanting based on his word alone. Right? I mean, if there are other witnesses who come to court and testify that that's what took place, then that's either the equivalent of a kasha or more. That, of course, is admissible. We're talking about on his say-so alone, he comes and says, oh, I was pressured. Or they say, oh, you know what? When we were there the first time, we were krovin. Or we were ketanim. Or we just lied. You know, we didn't like him at the time. Or whatever the story they make up. On their say-so alone, the rule is Kim Chig and Shuvin Echozer Mag. I say, some people say it's a single opportunity to testify. Others will say, what I think that it really is that the Haggadah Eidos is so consequential, we give it so much weight, and it's a formality that it just isn't open, you know, you just can't keep opening it up. What gives it its incredible force is the fact that it stands alone and that it stands, as being irrevocable. If you could go back and just, you know, recant your testimony all the time, you could never rely on
testimony. It depends on the circumstance under which the person goes back.
Right, I'm saying justification is still when I say Eisha Sishani, and then I go back and I say I did it because there were, you know, all these suitors after me. It's still only my. It makes sense, but it's still only my word against my previous word. Right. So the point is that in a baldav, in a shabin afshachatichli, when I'm the source of my own issue and problem, so I retain the right to revise that or to recant it as a case, however you'll understand it conceptually. But edus is something that is beyond my control. I'm a third party, and my status is a third party verification. Of what's taking place here, upon which you're going to rely as if it's factual, completely, meaning it's affecting other people. Shabbat Shabbat Chutzurah, affects me. Right? It may affect other parties, but as a spillover effect. Right? And even that's not so clear. That's the idea of Shavi Nam Shekhateta Mitzur. Edim, I'm a third party, and I'm affecting the parties themselves. What I say goes, I could put somebody can be put to death based on my testimony. For that to be effective, right, it has to be, you know, rigorously scrutinized, right? But at the same time, it has to be irrevocable. I think that's the main.
That was this question, because the Jewish and Chakira, the Bain thing that tells them we did our investigation as to this witness.
No, didn't if I, where you have Jewish and Chakira, that's part of it. But the Jewish and Chakira is to catch him if he doesn't qualify based on the Jewish and Chakira, throw out his testimony to out of Bezim. That's not Kazara.
But this is not, but
doesn't make a difference. The principle is the same. Meaning, the principle that Eidos is considered factual, well, that's part of what we're discussing here, in the first part of the topic too, the principle that Eidos is considered to be factual is true in the Phoshos and in Mamonos. The fact that it's true in the Phoshos doesn't make it less true, although it makes it less necessary. It's less necessary in Mamonos. But it's not less true in Mamonos if it's true in the Phoshos. In other words, in a different system of law, one could have said that you only rely on Eidos in Mamonos. But in Nefashos you require more, because Nefashos you need facts, and let's say in Mamonos it's enough to be pretty sure of yourself. But the way the halakha works is, if we believe Edom in Nefashos, because they're considered to have established a fact, right, then certainly it's not less of a fact than being in Mamonos. Right? So the point is that to be a fact, it has to be irrevocable. That's my suggestion to explain. It isn't just the Xerxes custom. There's a certain formality to Hagadah Seder that affects the world. It doesn't affect the Edom. The Edom actually is the least affected by it. It affects the Bali Dvarim. And it may affect everybody who's related to the Bali Dvarim, depending on what the Edom is. And therefore, there's this enormous impact, you know, based on this testimony, and therefore the testimony has to be, you know, kind of sacrosanct. It has to be something that is untouchable. The issue of Drisha v'Chakira is to establish the quality of Eidos to begin with that we're relying on. And that's the question. What's Mehatara? What's Rabbana? What about Nefashos? What about Mamonos? But it's irrelevant to this issue. Once that is or isn't complete, once that's completed and the testimony is, you know, so to speak, signed, sealed, delivered, you know, it's self-sufficient. But now the question is, when Edom come back to court, you know, to say, oh, we were joking, or we didn't mean to, but we were mistaken, how are you going to relate to that? At whatever point in time, you know, the sealing of the testimony takes place.
Independent of a third-party witness coming in and saying, you know, that guy who came in the other day, I know that he was paid to get the Edom the way...
That's called Akasha, or it could be Hazama. Or it could be making him a Nidon, making him a Russia. Independent of that, the guy himself
can't come and say, you know, I just want to tell the business.
Now I want to tell you the truth.
I feel badly, you know, now my conscience tells me,
right,
to tell you I got paid.
Because how do we know to believe him now any more than to believe him? According to, why should we believe him now? There's no, he didn't have evidence, doesn't have evidence now that he, other than his word, which is already compromised by his previous word. Right, so
we can throw out a testimony for another aid to come and
right, and then maybe you're doing an injustice to the beneficiary of his first testimony, which was honest, before he decided to be a liar and change his testimony. The point is that initially, at least, he had cheskas kashrus. Right. The question when he comes back is if that's another possible explanation of keeping chigi chigi nechozer magid. One way to look at it is, well, there's something fishy about the scout, let's throw out everything that he said, which is what you're saying. The other way to look at it is, when he came into court, he had no track record indicating any problems, and therefore the rule of Cheskas Kashrus kicks in, and we accept his testimony. Right now, he wants to negate testimony that the court has already admitted. Now we don't believe him. There's an interesting question before I take your mind. The Rabbi says in the name of Reb Chaim is to ask the following question. If you would say Chozer Magid, right, what would happen? would we say that it's pre-utre, or would we say that we believe the second testimony? That's kind of a variation, a little bit of what we're talking about. We would believe the second testimony, right? Right, so would you treat that as pre-utre, where there are differences? Safek, other than Maksik, Motzi, would you say, well, we don't know which testimony to believe? Now, it's like if another Kad of Edim came and testified again, then that's Trey of Trey. Or to say, what we do say is, we don't believe him because the first time he came to court, he was pure and pristine. Now he's a problem. King Chigachuv and Chozer Magen. One could say the opposite, that we not just treat it as Trey of Trey. We take it as, what do you call it, Kalesa, as if he never came to court, because he just, you know, contradicted himself, and therefore, you know, we don't place any credence at all in his testimony.
That's a general question. This is an halacha.
Yeah.
Great importance is placed on our God's Avis.
Yeah.
The power of it, the importance of it, could it be because circumstantial evidence plays a very small, if not no role at all?
Well, I think that is part of it. That's part of the pattern. That circumstantial evidence is certainly excluded, all things being equal, in the Foshos. That's the famous story of, you know, Shimon ben Shetach. The Gemara tells a story about, you know, the guy's running after the other guy with the knife, or the sword, actually. Knife's too small. Right, the sword, and he's swinging it away and threatening, and he backs him into a corner, and you lose sight of them, and there's no exit, and you walk in, and you find him, you know, standing over the other guy, the blood is dripping off the... It's like a pretty gory description in the Gemara. So you know what happened here, right? What can I do? The Gemara says, the Torah says, and you're stuck. But at least formally, you can't give him the regular formal punishment, corporal punishment, because it's circumstantial evidence. Now, in Dine Mamanis, it's a more complicated issue. Again, the Rambam's view is that circumstantial evidence can work in Dine Mamanis. The Ramban disagrees.
Potentially,
a chazaka is a kind of circumstantial, or you could say it's stronger circumstantial evidence. It's hard to say. But I think you're right, meaning all I'm trying to say is we invest tremendous significance to Edus, to real Edus. I mean, demanding real Edus, even by, as you point out, distinguishing between circumstantial evidence and evidence, even though we pretty much know what took place here, but it wasn't actually viewed or visualized by these Edim. Why does that matter so much? Because it's not 90%. It's like I said a couple of weeks, you want it to be 100%. Now, being 100% doesn't mean that there aren't sometimes people who lie and who, you know, who undermine the system. So if you take them to calculation, you could say every Edus is only 97%, or 94%, whatever the case, or 98%, it doesn't really matter to me. It's never 100%. But halacha generally doesn't view it that way. They really view it as, when there are Edim, it's 100%. When there's a problem, then there's a problem. But until, and unless we know of a problem, we really impute 100% factual, it's as if everybody saw it. That's why, I think you're right, that's why the distinction between circumstantial and real is so important. It's part of it. Okay. Because that's Nemanus, that's not Edus. That's part of the difference. We'll get to that later, but I even mentioned it right now. For example, does the rule of Kivin Sheigit, Shuvin Chozer Magid, does that apply to Edachod Nemun Bisur? That's a big debate among the Rishonim, Tshuvas Haran, and maybe we'll discuss it next week when we finish some of this up. The Tshuvas Haran, and there's a debate between the Chavetz Das and the Achronim and the Shev Shmaitza and others. The Chavetz Das is the Nesivas. The Nesivas sort of perish on Yoredeya that's called Chavetz Das. So, and of course, the Shev Shmaitza is the Ksos. But this is a, you know, big discussion. We know that a maskla works for Shadi Nachatiha Disur. That's very informal. That's very limited. It's very subjective. It's all about imposing limitations on myself, maybe with some spillover to others, but basically it's rooted and anchored in my own reality. Shadi Nachatiha Disur. A maskla works. very informal. Then you have the other side, which is Eidus, real Eidus, Eidus in court, Eidus Ksherit, not Isurit. So that, as I'm saying, is much more formalistic. The idea that that might be irrevocable, that it's a legal process, and that you can't to shake it, you know, is very reasonable. Now, what about all the things in between? Other nemonios that are more than, you know, subjective shavya nafsha, including what about Yechon Nam Nisurin? It's a good question. So where to draw the line is a big debate among the Rishonim and among the Achronim, and maybe we'll sum it up when we finish this off. We're running out of time this week, so we'll finish it off next week. But these are very, very important issues. Anyway, the Gemara says that there's this debate between Ula and the Ardai. Ula says Toin because of a Toin, and Ardai says Ain't a Toin because of a Toin. In this case, where, as I said before, you're revising, and it's a significant revision. Like if you say, what I meant was, you know, I rely on this land as if. Yeah, that didn't sound like that. That's not Pshuta Shel, you know, Shel Vibor. On the other hand, even Ula, the liberal constructionist, when it comes to you can revise, you know, etc., even he has a limit. Namely, you can revise, but you can't contradict. If the guy originally said, it wasn't your ancestral homeland, only mine, then he can't come back and say, now what I meant was, it was yours, but, you know, I rely upon it as if it was only mine. It just doesn't even fit into the contorted, you know, revision. On the other hand, Behechad Abakoy Bebedina, right, Velotan, Ba'otsun Evroy Vitan, also Edechos of Vitoin. Ula also agrees that once you step out of court, right, which most Shonim understand to mean, and you're subject then to other influences, right, so then even revision doesn't work. Revision in the context of your own counsel is one thing. Right, even if it's at a later stage in the Din Torah, like, you know, the Adam come, you see it's not going to, I didn't mean that, I meant something a little bit different. Once you step out of court, right, as most of Shonim understand it, I mean, the Gemara says step out of court. What's the significance of stepping out of court? So, according to most Rishonim, it's you then are taking the counsel of others. And the Ritva says, even in court, if you have a lawyer, once you start consulting with your lawyer, you can't change your title. Because it's a question of influence. You don't care about it in court now. Most Rishonim don't agree with Ritva. Anyway, my taima tanase hagmari. Umoda nahardai. On the other hand, the Hardai, who says that you can't revise in a radical way, he agrees that if the guy says, all I meant was that my parents owned the property. I didn't say they owned it for 100 years. I didn't say your parents didn't own the property. What I meant was, my parents purchased from your property. Now that already is not a contortion. Assuming that that works in with the Edim, that's not so terrible. If there's a din Torah that begins with an informal discussion out of court where people exchange claims and the guy changes the claim from his initial out of court claim to a different claim inside the court, below toin, also the beidin of a toin, everybody agrees, the chozer of a toin. There, of course, you can change or revise your taina. My taina, avidin ishlo megali panase, ela. Libedina. People, you know, as a matter of strategy, are only going to reveal their real claim, you know, where it counts. That's the shock of the Gemara. What we saw last time, and I want to build on for a few more minutes before we move on, I don't have so much time, is the question of Nigu Neged Eidim. What we saw was that there's another Gemara in Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, almost a parallel Gemara. But instead of Rabbah versus Abaya, it's Rav Chisda against Abaya and Rabbah. And what we saw was that most are of the opinion that the two Gemaras are identical. But that, at least the Marsha thought that these are two different Gemaras, and that's why the different authorities, and that the difference goes as follows. If you look at the Rashbam there, the question is as follows. Is there any give at all? Is this an absolute Migu B'makom Edim? Or not. Is it mutually exclusive when I say Shalavosai and he says Shalavosecha, either on the Taina level or in terms of what the Edim come and actually testify to, when they come and they say, Shalavosav Hayu, pointing to one, do they really mean or establish below Shalavosecha, not yours? So the idea of the Marsha was that maybe according to the Rashbam, there are two different Gemaras. The Gemara Lama Gimel of the Beis, which is where the Rashbam is very adamant, the Edom are saying it's mutually exclusive. The Bali Dvarim are saying it's mutually exclusive. Nonetheless, Rav Chisda believes Miku B'Makom Edim Amrina, even though it's against real Edim and there's no reconciliation possible. That's the Gemara Lama Gimel on the Beis. However, the Gemara here on Lama Aleph and Aleph, by virtue of the fact that the Gemara does continue and say, well, what if he himself would revise or amend or amplify, you know, as the case may be, what if he did that? Well, the very fact that the Gemara could talk about that shows us that these two claims, or the Edim siding with one of the claims, is not mutually exclusive to the other claim. Right? Otherwise, what's the whole discussion in the Gemara? Trying to close the Torah. Hardai and Ula, this condition, that condition. So that's how the Marsha explains that these are really two different Gemaras. One Gemara, the Gemara here, is a question of how far do we go to reconcile what seems to be contradictory, but isn't necessarily contradictory? Will we reconcile on our own, right, without the Balei Dvarim themselves either being able to or making or initiating the revisions? That's the Gemara here, Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara, Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, is a real discussion. What about Migu Neged Eidim? So just to point out that the Ramban here certainly takes the view that the Gemara here, Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, is not mutually exclusive. And it is a case where the issue really is, will we say Migu in order to, will we accept the Migu and force a plausible reconciliation which doesn't come, or at least is not initiated by one of the Balei Dvarim? Will Beis Din initiate a reconciliation that is not anchored in the taina of the Balei Dvarim or not? That's an interesting question about the role of Beis Din, possibly, or about the role of Migu. We know that Migu works. But usually Migu works to reinforce or to sustain a taina that one of the Balei Dvarim make. We don't put Migu in as an objective factor in the mix and say, oh, we have an Edim, we have a Migu. Let's see if there's some way to reconcile the two. Edim is objective. Migu is a source of credibility for the very partisan claim, right, of one of the Balei Dvarim. So the point may be, in Migu you accept or you don't accept. You don't say, oh, there's a Migu here. There's Edus here, there's a Migu here. It's a whole different mentality. And some of the Rishonim say that explicitly. Some of the Rishonim say here that we don't find Migu as a Mefaresh, right, or Metartzinan Dibur. That's the argument. Do we say Metartzinan Dibure, which is another way of saying reconciliation, right? Do we say that on the basis of a Migu? If you have two Edim, two different sets of Edim, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, even though the Kabbalah's Edos of each one alone, right, might put them at odds, and that's all things being equal, if they doesn't hear X, they would accept it and expand upon it in this way. If they were to hear Y, they'd say they'd go in a different direction. But when they hear X and Y, and they're both Edios, so Bezin's job is to try to reconcile. Because Edus is an objective source of information, and therefore, when two sources, you do whatever you can, right, to avoid the clash. But Migu is highly subjective. It's the credibility of the claim. Do we make a new claim, or we forge a new claim on behalf of the Baal Dabar in order to avoid the clash between a Migu and an Edim? So what I'm trying to say is that even if you take the Ramban and Rav Rishonim's view of this sugya, which is that it's about reconciliation, there are interesting issues here about the role of Beis Din and the role of Migu, in particular in Beis Din, enforcing reconciliation. The Ramban even goes so far as to have the possibility to say that even when it seems like the Edim are explicitly, mutually, exclusively rejecting one of the Tainas, will we go so far, based on the Migu, according to that Mandamar, to say, you know what, the Edim are exaggerating a little bit. or we accept their testimony, but, you know, maybe we should revise their testimony a little bit. For example, let's say the Adam said, you know, it belonged to X's parents till the day that they died. Right? And they never sold it. But that would seem to make the possibility that Y's parents bought from X's parents impossible. Because if the ex parents had the property and they didn't sell it before they died, so then that's the end of it. Right? So Ramban says, if you look here in the first Ramban that we have, which is the second piece, this is the last paragraph, the only we didn't really get a chance to look at. The Nucha Lefarsha Filib Shahidu Edim Shemesu Avosu Shalma'ar Mitocha. We can even interpret in a situation where the Edim said, Shemesu Avosav Shoma'arer Bitocha, that the other person's parents did not sell the property before they died. Which is another way of saying, according to the full story that they're telling, there's no room for reconciliation. Even then, Rava says, based on the Migu, we carve out, you know, a little bit of reconciliation territory. Maybe on that point the Edim aren't quite accurate, right? That they said that it belonged to the other fellow's property. That probably was, you know, their property, you know, practically till the day they died. They probably know that. Maybe they think they know. Obviously, they think they know. We're not accusing them of being Edei Sheker. They think they know that there was no transaction, you know, before the death. But maybe that's something they can't really know, or they weren't really so medactic. It's a bit of what we sometimes call bididami. That part they're projecting. That part they think. That's going pretty far. Right? Again, because of the migu, there's Edim, as much as possible, we don't want there to be a contradiction. An interesting legal philosophical question. We'll make this reconciliation. After all, you Omar Bagufna Zahar Pakod Mal the Shakar, it's written Gamar Babitya. Think so this. Afagav Divada Ikemaya, or they smak Mismaya, in a certain case they said don't bring the cow, you know, that way because there's water there, they'll drown. Right? So of course the guy did. And question is it a pshia? So he said, no, it's true, but he had a migu. He said, I could have said it brought him the other way, so believe me when I said it brought him this way, but he didn't die because of the water. He didn't die because he drank. But he died because of the shock of seeing so much water, whatever it was. Very unlikely. So the Ramban is saying, no, we carve out a little spot. The Vada Ikemaya, Lo Beis Makwas Maya, Heich Nami. So Ramban is saying we'll go very far according to this man the Amar, right, Rabba, to avoid a clash between Migu and Edim. But what we will not say according to Ramban is that there's a man the Amar out there who thinks that Migu clashing head-to-head against Edim, no one thinks that Migu can win against Edim. But as we saw last week, the simple shot of the Rajbam is that, according to Abchiz at least, we didn't say that. And the Ravon, we also saw last week, says Trey or Trey. Now the Ravon's Trey or Trey, I think can be explained, and the other sheet as well, in the following way. As I said before, we rely on Eidus as if it's 100%. And again, this is an important principle in halachic or hashkafic theory here. We treat Eidus as if it's 100%, even though we know that in the aggregate, right, not everybody's honest. Right, there are a few bad apples in the pool of Eidim, you know, out there. Torah has the contingency for Azama and for Akasha. Torah tells us, you know, warns us not to lie. Apparently people lie even under testimony, and we know that they do. So why not say there's no such thing? How could you ever treat Eidus as facts? Treat it as a huge rove. right? Maybe even a role of belief later for Safek, but it's a fact. So as I mentioned, I think last week, there's a Sefer Chinuch that implies that. Chinuch says, oh, you have one aid, it's one thing, you have two aidim. You know, that's such a strong role, you don't have to worry about anything. And that in itself is interesting. The difference between one and two is the quality of one and two. There's a debate among the Achronim in particular, you know, Bar Eirachod versus Shnayim, there's more than Manos. So some say, oh, it's like a Gersa Kasu, Torah says two. One is just as them, one is two, but you need two. And then the Sivas in a very famous piece says, Vidadami, what I said before. The problem is, you have one, his imagination, maybe his projection, maybe taking over a little bit. You can eliminate the projectioning when you have two. So that is pure fact. Right? Another possibility is that what the Chinuch says, which is that when you have two, so then you eliminate the suffix. Does it still remain the kind of a rove? Maybe. But most Rishonim, like the Rambam, are of the opinion that Edom is not rove. It's not even a strong rove. Edom is fact. But it's what I said before. That's the Zeres HaKasu. We treat it as 100% unless or until we know otherwise. We don't calculate the bad apples or the occasional Hakasha or Hazama. We never anticipate them in a given case. It's 100%. However, is that true just as we revise it when there's Hakasha or Hazama? Is it possible that if we have some other very strong piece of evidence which allows us to doubt whether or not this Xeris HaKasav of 100%, maybe also then we'll look at it not as 100% but as 80 or 90 or whatever the case may be? So I think that that's a model for explaining the view of, let's say, Rav Chisda or maybe Rabba, that Migu, you don't pass him this way, but Migu, B'malkom Edim, either Amrinam, or that it's trade trade. I also think that even for the Rabban, as I think I said last time, you don't need it to be equal, trade or trade. It's enough to say that the Migu, right, challenges the 100% of the Edim, and that maybe creates its own trade or trade, even if there remains an imbalance. In other words, it's possible that the Edim is still far more compelling than the Migu. But it's possible that without Edim, that are 100%, you always have the equivalent of Trey or Trey. Either way, that's the suggestion. Now, what's interesting, just mention this for a few minutes and we'll finish with this next time, what about Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitir? We've spoken many times about the difference between Migu and Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitir. We pointed out that Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitir is at minimum a stronger Migu, and it might even be more than that. Again, Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitir is a case where, at minimum, Migu Dibar Shafzik, he doesn't have to say anything. Somebody has, he has a taina in his pocket, and therefore the taina that he makes should be believed because of the better one that he could have made. That's the Migu. Pesha Asar, he could have been quiet, he didn't have to say a word, by initiating, problems for himself, we should believe him. So it's either stronger credibility, a stronger Migu, or it's even more than that, as we discussed, it's Mishpat Echad, no Paginan, Dibure. What we say is, listen, either you accept my statement on this matter, or you reject it. But you can't have it both ways. We can't be selective and say, the Pesha Asar part I accept, the Pesha Yitir part I don't believe you. It's all or nothing. That's even a higher Madrega. Now, would there be a difference between Pesha Asar and Pesha Yitir, Keneged Edim and Migu Neged Edim? Well, on the surface one would think not, because Edim is still Edim. And the real problem with Migu Keneged Edim isn't the Migu. The problem is not that the Migu isn't strong enough, it's that the Edim is too strong. Yes?
The implication of Kesubah seems, the implication of Kesubah suggests the, if there are Edim there, there's no Pesha Asar, so I presume. Because the
aid
is better.
But in the case of Pesha Asar,
so I presume that you're,
those aren't cases
on mind. I presume you have something else in mind, so maybe you could.
What would be a case? Oh, you mean like construct a case?
Well, No, no, when you were talking about...
I'm not talking about those cases. Those are not cases of Pashas or Neganim.
Right.
I'll give you, give you a very simple case right here. Just turn here. We're just going to go for another 5 minutes since we started late. Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. This actually comes up, but in a kind of an interesting way. Crazy Dravid is a very famous case also in Kesuk Sabbatim. Not sure if we're going to get to it later, so at least we should see it. Crazy Dravid Baravin at the two dots in the middle of the page. Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. Crazy Dravid Baravin. Shachiv. Right? The relative of Rav Idi Bar Avin died. The Shavik Dikla, and he left behind a decal tree. Rav Idi Bar Avin Amar, Ana Karivna, say, I should inherit this property because I'm the closest relative to the decal owner. Right? Bahu Gavra, then there was another guy around, right, to the relatives, you know, coming out of the woodwork all of a sudden, when there's a decal tree involved. Sahu Gavra says, I'm not Kariv Natsvei. I'm a closer relative than Rav Idi Bar Avin, and I'm entitled to the decal tree. So Lesof Odilei the Iyu Kariv Tvei. Now this is very tricky Gemara. There's all sorts of ways to read this case in the Gemara. Let's assume we're going to read for the moment like the Rajbam. Okay, the Rajbam says that what happened here was the guy, the Karov who came out of the woodwork, right, he admitted, right, that Rav Idi Bar Avin is a closer, well, originally he said, I'm closer, therefore I'm entitled to the decal tree. And now he comes up and says, you know what? And by the way, the Gemara says, or the Rishonim understand, he grabbed the decal tree. So it was called Alam Gavar, each one claiming that it's theirs, and he was control of it because it's called Alam Gavar. In this case, he was, mightier, so he controlled the decal tree. And then he said, you know what? He's a closer relative than I am. I'm relinquishing the decal tree to my good cousin here, Rav Idi Bar Avin. So the Gemara says, Ukmaro Kizda Biyadei. Bye. On my lay. So then he said to him, Lihadali, Rav Idi Bar Avin turned to the guy, and he said, Lihadali, Peir Dachal Mau Yomad Hashta. You've been eating the payros for the last 6 months till your conscience got the better of you to admit that I'm the Karov Tvei. So it's very fine and good that I now have my property, my decal tree back, but I'd also like you to compensate me for the Achilos payros for the last 6 months. A reasonable claim. Amar Zeush Amra Lemadam Gadolhu. So he said, Rav Chizda said, this is the words of an Adam Gadol. After all, the only reason we gave him back the decal tree to Rav Idi Bar Avin is on this guy's say-so, and this guy claimed that he had the right to eat the payros. So Vaiva Rava disagreed, and they'll explain one second. Lo Svir Lahadra Kizda. They said, no, this is not correct. After all, Kivin the Odi, so what's going on here? Well, Bai Rava said, listen, the guy admitted that he's not the closest relative. And there are two consequences for that. One is that the decal goes back, and number two, that he goes to the Mafreya, that the guy's been stealing his payros for 6 months. Kivin to Odi, once he did a Hodah Spaldin that he's not the closest Karov, we should apply consistently the principle of Hodas Baldin, and you should get back the decal on the payros. Well, what did Rav Chizda think? So some Rishonim say Rav Chizda felt that the argument is as follows: Migu, and then the Migu, Hapesha Asar, Pesha Yitzir. He's the one who initiated, right, the return of the decal tree. He was in control. He didn't do anything at that point in time. He claimed the not Karizna. He was called Alam Gavar. He was controlling this. He had this tree and its payros legitimately now in his possession. Right? He gave it up. But he also said that the payros were his. Therefore, it's Pesha Asar, Pesha Yitir. And that should win it for him. So that's how Rashi now. The way the Rashbam interprets the issue, the real issue revolves around the question of Hodos Balin Kamedim Dami. Right, when I say, I admit it's not mine, based on Hodos Balin Kamedim Dami, right, is that the famous issue? Is that a Schaibus? Or is that Eidus? But basically, you don't believe me. Why should you believe me? I don't have any evidence, one way or another. But since I'm incriminating myself, right, I'm making a statement that is to my detriment, so we'll apply it as you wish. If it's a schayvus, so if I only mean to be mischayev myself for a limited amount, mikan l'haba, for the dekel, but not for the peros, then there's no problem. If, on the other hand, you say hodos balin kamedim dami is nemanus, when it comes to himself, and especially l'chavatso, we believe him. So then you have to believe him across the board in a consistent way. You can't say, oh, believe him, that he's the closest relative, you know, with respect to the Karen, with respect to the tree, but don't believe him with respect to the fact that I've eaten peros for the last 6 months. Obviously, that's an inconsistent taina. So the way Rashbam sets it up, and some Achronim understand it this way, basically the argument revolves around Hodos Balin Kenedim. But not everybody agrees. Some of them say that the real issue here is Migu, or Pesha Asar. On the one hand is Hodos Balin, right? And that's the equivalent of Hodos Balin is Kimeya Edim Dami. On the other hand, Migu Di'iboy Lohav Omar, or a Pesha Asar Pesha Hitzer, Migu Di'iboy Shasik. He doesn't have to say a thing. So if he says, you get the Dekel tree because you're the Karov today, but I keep the Peros because I'm the Karov today, right? Or I was the Karov today, then you believe him. So the Balamar, if you look here just very quickly, I have two more minutes.
And at any time somebody commits a law,
yeah,
you always have to pressure out the pressure either, and then you never have to pay who's saying.
No. Only when he wants to split. Well, that is the case. That really is the argument of Kreider Rebbe, according to Rashbam. Meaning, if I admit something, but there are two aspects of it, only there are two aspects of it. So I'm admitting it vis-a-vis one, but there's another part of it, like here, the Karen and the Peros. Right? So that's Rav Chisda saying. Rav Chisda saying exactly that. Rav Chisda saying to Todos Padin Kamedim Dami. But you yourself limit it, even though the story, the application of the story is inconsistent. But you yourself limit it to the Dekel, then it doesn't apply to the Peros. Now what Abai and Rava say is Kivin the Odi. Odi, what does that mean?
Right.
It has to be consistent. We pass like a Abai and Rava. But if you hold that Hodos Balin is a Chaybus, it's not such a crazy sheet of Rav. Meaning, you don't believe him anyway. If he wants to throw away his Dekel tree, let him throw away his Dekel tree. Why should he throw away the Peros? We don't really believe him. That's the art. That's exactly why it's such an important Gemara. People always talk about Hodos Balin. According to certain understanding, created our Betz Machlokas already in the Gemara. In the MRI. So the Balamar is a different girsa, a different reading of this whole sugya. And he says, we're just going to finish this now. He says here on page Yud Zayin Amud Aleph in the Daf Yarif. I'm just going to show you two lines very quickly. Created Ravidi Barov, see the Balamar? Bottom of the page on the right. Also Ravidi Barov and I see Sadi Diu created the Logarcino Diu Makariv today. Right? Not that there is evidence that he is more of a relative, that Aiden came, as Balamar says, that he brought evidence that he is a Karov, but not that he's Karov today. Why? The Ihachi, let's say in that case, Rav Yehuda Bar Avin brought Aiden that he was a Karov, today. Amaya Rina B'maskana Kiva to Odi, Odi. Havel the Meir Ma'al V'shakar B'makom Aiden B'lo Rina K'damina L'al B'gemara, U'K'damina L'kaman. Okay, this is a little bit different than the Rashbam, so let's take this case. Let's say Rav Yehuda Bar Avin came, again, Rav Yehuda Bar Avin claimed he was the closest relative and the thing belonged to him. The other fellow said, I'm the closest relative. Nobody conceded. Rav Yehuda Bar Avraham brings evidence that he is the closest relative. But the other guy has a migu. What's the migu? Migu di bayamar lo achalti peros. It's a slightly different case. Nema lomar achalti peros. Right, by Nikarov Tve.
He doesn't have Migu.
But he's a Migu. So what's that case? Migu. Makom Eidim. So the Balamor says that can't be the case. Because if that were the case, that would be Migu, but Makom Eidim. Believe me, in my claim that I'm Makarov Tve, even though it's against Eidim, because I have a Migu, I could have said I didn't need any Peros. You only know that there are Peros because of me. That's the Balamor's gear, so that he's rejected. That can't be right, says the Balamor, because that would be Migu, the Mako made him. And that's not what Abayin Rava said. What did Abayin Rava say? Kivin the Odi, Odi. They should have said, Migu, the Mako made him, Al the Shakar, the Mako made him, Lo Amrinan, a fine literary Ha'ar of Balamor. So the Ramban, with this we conclude for today. Ramban says as follows, Umayin Dama, two lines from the bottom. In the middle of the second line, from up, from the bottom. Everybody have it? Umayd Amar? So one line up, in other words, the two lines, not the last line, but the second to last line, in the middle of the line. Umayd Amar lo garcinam de iu makari tve, mishim de lormin an achi, mala shaka babaka made of lormin. Imi shimhalo iria, says Ramban, tahaka hapesh asar, hapesh hitir. This is a very profound Ramban, although it's not as far-reaching as it seems. Ramban says, it's not Mali L'Shakar B'Mokom Eidim, it's Pesh Aser Pesh Yehitir B'Mokom Eidim. Because the guy could have said, there were no Peros. I didn't eat any Peros. He's the one who brings up the Peros. He digs his own grave. Pesh Asar, he says, I ate Peros, you wouldn't know that without me, but I'm the car of today. I have a right to do it. So it's Pesh Asar Pesh Yehitir, Neged, Eidim, because the Eidim say no, or Rav Yehuda Bar Avraham is car of today. The Ramban says one could have been Mechalek between Pesh Asar Pesh Yehitir, B'Mokom Eidim, and me. Now, some people read this Ramban and they say, oh, the Ramban says that Pesh Asa Pesh Yitzir Mokom Eidim works. That's not exactly true. The Ramban is trying to explain a literary question that the Balamor asks, which is, how come Abai and Rava say Kivim the Odi Odi, and why don't they say Mal the Shakar B'Mokom Eidim? So it does imply that there could have been a difference. It still falls short. Next week I'll show you one other example within the Ramban, where he distinguishes between Pesh Asa and Mal the Shakar, also in a similar kind of case, and then we'll finish up this whole topic.